5. Spring term B. Art reflects life. By the way, I'm broke, Rain said through the open window of her tiny Ford car. So I hope you guys have cash on you. I called Rain the next morning, praying she would be up for the rescue Alid from university plan, which, of course, she was. I'll pay petrol, said Karis, as she climbed into the back seat. Rain watched her with amazement. I'm Karis, said Karis. Yeah, said Rain. Wow. She realized she was staring and cleared her throat. I'm Rain. You don't look much like Alid. Well, we're twins, but we're not actually the same person. I moved the seat back up and sat down. You sure you're okay to drive us all the way up north? Rain shrugged. Beats going to school. Karis chuckled. Very true. Just as Rain started the engine, I had a sudden thought. Do you think we should see if Daniel wants to come? Rain and Karis turned to look at me. I think if he knew about all this, he'd want to come, I said. You really are the most thoughtful person on this earth, said Rain. Karis shrugged. The more the merrier. I took out my phone and called Daniel. I told him everything. All okay? Said Rain. Yeah, we need to pick him up. Karis was staring out of the window. Rain looked at her in the rearview mirror and said, You're right, mate. What are you looking at? Don't worry. Let's go. We drove to his house to pick him up. He was sat waiting on the low brick wall outside his house, wearing a burgundy jumper under his school suit. He looked slightly like he was about to have an anxiety attack. I got out of the car to let him climb in next to Karis. He sat down and they exchanged a long look. Jesus fucking Christ, he said. You're back. I'm back, she said. And it's good to see you too. It was a 6-hour drive. It started off fairly tense. Rain seemed to be a bit wary of Karis in the same way that I used to be, mainly because Karis was extremely intimidating. Daniel kept passing his phone from hand to hand and asking me to repeat exactly what had happened to Alid over Christmas. Around 2 hours into the drive, we stopped at a service station so Rain could fuel up on coffee and we could all go to the loo. As we were heading back to the car, wind blowing around the car park, Rain asked Karis, So, where do you disappear off to then? London, said Karis. I work for the National Theatre. I run workshops and stuff. Pays pretty well. May, I know the National. I saw Warhorse there a few years ago. Rain stared at Karis intently. Didn't you need any qualifications for that? No, said Karis. They didn't even ask. Daniel frowned at this, and Rain didn't say anything in response, but her mouth stretched into a grin. And as Karis was climbing back into the car, Rain murmured to me, I like her. Things in the car eased up a bit after that. Rain let me take control of her iPod, so I put Maddie in on, but Daniel grumbled that it was too loud. So I gave up and put on Radio 1. Karis stared through her sunglasses out of the window, like she was Audrey Hepburn. I was feeling extremely on edge. Alid had not texted me back. Chances are, Alid would just be in his uni room or at a lecture or something. But I still couldn't stop thinking about him doing something more serious. Things like that happened, didn't they? And Alid didn't have anyone anymore. Are you okay, Francis? Asked Daniel. We were sitting next to each other in the back seat now. The question appeared to be sincere, and he was gazing at me with dark eyes. He just hasn't got anyone. Alid hasn't got anyone anymore. Oh, that's bullshit. Daniel sat back with a sneer. There are four of us in this car. I skipped a chemistry lesson for this. There was something calming about the motorway. I'd always thought that. I put my earphones in and listened to an episode of Universe City and watched the blur of grey and green outside. Daniel was next to me, leaning his head on the window, both hands gripping his phone. Karis was sipping a bottle of water. Rain was moving her mouth along to the words of whatever song was playing on the radio. But I had my earphones in, so I couldn't quite make out what the song was. In my ears, Alid said, or radio said, I wished I had as many stories as her. And although we were all panicking about the same thing, I momentarily felt like we were at peace. I felt the least stressed I had been in a long time. I closed my eyes. The hum of the car and the buzz of the radio and the murmur of Alid's voice all mixing into one glorious sound. When we were half an hour away, I said, I feel like we're in Universe City. Rain laughed. In what way? Radio's trapped in Universe City, and someone's finally heard him. Someone is going to rescue him. Art reflects life, said Karis. Or maybe it's the other way around. A computer with a sad face. Before we knew it, much quicker than I'd expected, we reached Alid's university town. In many ways, it was extremely similar to our own hometown. Tall, Dickensian buildings and cobbled streets, a small market square with an array of high street shops, a river running through the whole thing. It was gone 9 p.m. now. Everywhere was busy and there were students all over the place, walking around town or hanging around pubs. It took a good 20 minutes of driving to find St. John's College. Rain parked outside on double yellow lines. It looked tiny, just like a terraced house. And I didn't really understand how a building so small could be an entire university college. Once we were inside, however, we found that the college stretched into many of the surrounding buildings. We stood awkwardly in the college foyer. There was a large staircase to our right, and also two corridors up ahead. Now what? I said. Does Alid know we're coming? Asked Daniel. Yeah, I texted him. Did he reply? No. Daniel turned to me. So, we've just turned up uninvited. Everyone was silent. To be fair, mate, we were in a bit of a panic, said Rain. It sounded like Alid was about to kill himself or some shit. She'd said the words that nobody had dared to say yet, and it sent us all back into silence. Does anyone even know where his room is? Asked Karis. Maybe we should just ask at reception, I said. I'll ask, said Karis, with absolutely no hesitation. And she walked towards the reception desk where an elderly man was sitting. She talked with him for a moment and then walked back. He's not allowed to tell us, apparently. Daniel groaned. We could ask a few students, Rain suggested. See if they know him. Karis nodded in agreement. What if no one even knows Alid, though? I asked. Rain was about to say something when a completely different voice sounded from the staircase. Sorry, did you guys say Alid? We all turned around in unison to find ourselves faced with a guy wearing a university rowing polo shirt. Yes, I said. Are you friends from home? Yes, I'm his sister, said Karis, sounding 10 years older than she was. Oh, thank God, said the student. Why, thank God, Daniel snapped. Ah, well, he's just been acting a bit strangely. I live opposite him and he doesn't leave his room hardly ever, for starters. He doesn't come to college meals anymore, stuff like that. Whereabouts is his room? Said Karis. The student gave us directions. But I'm so glad he's got friends from home, said the student just before he left. I mean, he seems so isolated. It was decided that I would go alone into Alid's room. I was kind of glad, in a way. I seemed to have been walking for ages, down blue carpeted halls with cream, chipped walls and shiny doors, when I found the room. I knocked. Hello? There wasn't a reply, so I knocked again. Alid? Nothing. I tried the handle. It was unlocked, so I went inside. The room was dark. The curtains were closed, so I turned the lights on. It was a demolition site. The room itself was a typically minuscule uni room, smaller than my room at home. It had space for a single bed, then a couple of square meters of floor, a dingy-looking wardrobe, an equally dingy desk. The curtains were so thin that you could see the streetlights through them. But it was the contents of the room that worried me. It was way beyond normal mess, and Alid had never been very messy in the first place. There was a huge pile of clothes on his desk chair, and more on the floor, pretty much covering up every bit of carpet. His wardrobe was almost empty, and his bed was unmade, and it didn't look like the sheets had been changed in months. There were at least 12 empty bottles of water on his bedside table, along with a laptop, its on light flashing gently. The walls were the only clean part of the room. He hadn't put up any posters or pictures at all. They were just dull, mint green breeze blocks. It was freezing. He'd left his window open. The desk was covered in miscellaneous sheets of paper, tickets, leaflets, food packets, and fizzy drink cans. I picked up a piece of paper from the desk. It was mostly blank apart from a few lines. Poetry 14.1. George Herbert, Form and Voice Lecture. Bullet point 1. 1630s. 2. Paratext. Gerard Jennett. The textual form on a poem takes. What it looks like on the page. 3. Dialogue. Trochaic. 4. John Wesley's Christ, 1744. 1844? The rest of the page was covered in swirly lines. I continued searching through the papers on the desk, not entirely sure what I was looking for. I came across a lot of lecture notes, with only one or two bullet points on them. There were also several letters from Student Finance, reminding him that he had to reapply if he wanted funding next year. Then I found the first handwritten note. Honestly, how fucking dare you take away a show that's so precious to so many people? You think that you control everything about it, but the show's gone way beyond that now. You wouldn't even be in this position if it wasn't for us. Bring back University, or you'll regret it. Then I found a second. Fuck you, Alid Last. You have ruined the happiness of so many people across the world. Hope you are happy. And then a third. Lol, why bother staying alive if you're not making University? You have ripped out the hearts of thousands of people. Just kill yourself. Then a fourth. Then a fifth. I found 19 of them scattered across his desk. I was confused and terrified. And then I remembered that photo of Alid from months ago, showing him walking into the college. All these people had to do was write a letter, put his name on the envelope, and address it to the college. And the result was Alid getting bombarded with hate mail. Then I came across a letter that had the YouTube logo on the header, along with a variety of other logos I didn't recognise. I quickly skimmed it. Dear Mr. Last, as you have failed to respond to our emails, we hope you do not mind us contacting you via mail. We at Live Video would like to invite you to take part in our summer convention, Live Video London. As your YouTube channel, Universe City, has risen to great popularity within the last year, we wondered whether you would be interested in putting on a live version of the show. We've never staged a live version of a storytelling channel such as yours before, and it would be a great honour for us to have you as the first. There were several other follow-up letters confirming that Alid hadn't responded to any of them, which made me feel suddenly very sad. Underneath the pile of papers, I found Alid's phone. It was turned off. So I turned it on, since I knew his passcode, and immediately he received 8 new messages. Most of them were from me, dating back from early January. He hadn't turned his phone on since January. "What the fuck?" said a voice from behind me. I turned round, and Alid was standing in the doorway. He was wearing a white T-shirt that had a computer with a sad face on it, with pale blue ripped jeans. His hair was below his shoulders now, and it was the sort of green-grey of someone who dyed their hair multiple times different colours, and then left it for a while. In one hand, he was holding a toothbrush and a tube of toothpaste. The most notable thing, however, was that he'd lost a rather extreme amount of weight since the last time I'd seen him at Christmas. Alid hadn't been particularly skinny during the time I'd known him, and now his face had lost its roundness, his eyes looked sunken, and his T-shirt hung off him like a tent. His mouth was open in shock. He tried to say something else, and then he bolted. "Listen." I pelted after him, but I quickly lost him and found myself outside in the dark. I was pretty sure he'd run out of the building, but I couldn't see which way he'd gone, and in this weather he was probably freezing his arse off in just his T-shirt and jeans. I fumbled for my phone and found his name in my contacts and called him, but obviously he didn't answer. But then remembered that his phone was back in his room, and he hadn't used it for weeks. I didn't know what to do. Would he turn up if I just waited for him inside? Or would he do something dangerous? He clearly wasn't thinking rationally. I turned round and looked at the college door. I couldn't go in. I started to run down the street and into the town centre. I spotted him almost instantly. He stood out in just his white T-shirt among all the students in big coats and jumpers, laughing and chatting and looking like they were having the time of their lives. They probably were. I called out for him, and he turned and saw me and started running again. Why was he running? Did he not want to see me that badly? I followed him down some steps in the street and round a corner and onto a bridge. He turned right again and disappeared down some more steps, and I followed, realising suddenly where he was going. He disappeared into the door of a nightclub. Music was blaring out of the club. There wasn't a queue, but I could see it was already packed inside. "You're eat, lass?" said the bouncer in a strong Geordie accent. "Have you got any ID for me, love?" I didn't. I didn't drive, and it wasn't like I carried my passport with me. "No, it's just, I can't let you in without ID, love." I grimaced. Arguing with a 6'5" bald Geordie man was probably not the best idea, but I didn't have any choice. "Please, my friend just ran into here. He's really upset. I just need to talk to him. I'll leave as soon as I found him, I swear. The bouncer gave me a sympathetic look. He checked his watch and sighed. Go on then, lass. It's only 10 o'clock. I gasped out a thank you and then ran inside. It was worse than Johnny R's. The floor was sticky and dirty. The walls were dripping with condensation, and you could hardly see anything through the dark or hear anything other than the blare of classic pop tunes. I barged through the crowds of students jumping up and down. Oddly, most of them seemed to be in jeans and t-shirts, nothing like the dressed-up sixth form crowd at Johnny R's back home. I searched and searched, ignoring the students giving me disapproving looks when I barged past them. Then went upstairs and did it again. And then, there, white t-shirt, leaning against a wall. His hair looked grass green against the flashing lights. I grabbed him by the upper arms before he saw me coming, and he jumped so hard I could feel his bones move. Alid! I shouted, though there wasn't much point. Even I couldn't hear any sound come out. The music was so loud that everything was vibrating. The floor, my skin, my blood. He was gazing at me like he'd never seen a real human being before. His eyes had deep purple shadows underneath them. He hadn't washed his hair for at least several days. His skin flashed blue, red, pink, orange. What are you doing? I shouted, but neither of us could hear it. The music's too loud. He opened his mouth and said something, but I couldn't hear, and I couldn't lip read either, even though I was trying to listen harder than I had ever listened before. Then he bit his lip and stayed very still. I missed you so much, I said, the only true thing I could think of saying. And I think he might have been able to lip read it because his eyes filled with tears and he mouthed, me too. And I'd never wanted to hear his voice so badly in all the time that I'd ever spent with him. I didn't know what else to do, so I just wrapped my arms around his waist and put my head on his shoulder and held him. At first, he didn't do anything. Then he raised his arms, slowly, and placed them round my shoulders. And then he rested his head against mine. After a minute or so, I could feel him shaking. After another minute, I realized I was crying as well. It felt so real. It didn't feel like I was trying to be someone I'm not, like I was putting on an act. I cared about him, and he cared about me. That was all it was. No one. We went to the town square. We didn't even say anything while we were walking there. We held hands because it felt like the right thing to do. We sat down on a stone bench. I realised several minutes later that this was the exact spot where Alid had been in that stalker photo posted on Tumblr several months ago. The thing I hate most when I'm in a bad mood is other people being very pitying and sympathetic with me. And I knew this wasn't just any old bad mood. But I decided I'd take a different approach. So, you've been feeling a bit shit then? I asked. We were still holding hands. Alid's eyes crinkled a little, a hint of a smile. He nodded, but didn't say anything. What's been doing that then? If it's a specific person, I can 100% beat them up. He smiled again. You couldn't beat a fly up. The sound of his voice in the air, in the real world, nearly made me start crying again. I thought about it, That's probably true, actually. They're too fast. I'm very slow in most areas of my life. He laughed. It was magic. So, what seems to be the trouble? I said, in what I imagined was a doctor voice. Alid tapped my hand with his fingers. Just everything. I waited. I hate being at university, he said. Yeah? Yeah. His eyes welled up again. I hate it. I hate everything about it. I'm going insane. A tear fell, and I squeezed his hand. Why don't you quit? I whispered. I can't go home. I hate it there too. So I've got nowhere to go, he said, his voice croaky. Nowhere to go. No one to help me. I'm here, I said. I can help you. He laughed again, though it died away almost instantly. Why did you stop talking to me? I said, because even now I still didn't understand. And Daniel? I... His voice caught. I was scared. Scared of what? I just ran away from all the difficult things in my life, he said, and then laughed exasperatedly. If something's hard, if I have to talk to someone about something difficult, I just avoid it and ignore them, as if they'll make it go away. What? So, with us, you... I couldn't face the idea of you two, I don't know, rejecting me forever. I thought it'd be better if I just ignored you. But why would we do that? He wiped his eyes with his free hand. Well, okay, so me and Dan, we argued about lots of things. Mainly about the fact that he doesn't believe me when I say I like him. Like, he thinks I'm lying to him, or something ridiculous. He thinks I'm just pretending to be attracted to him because I feel sorry for him, and because we've been friends for so long. He glanced at me, seeing the expression on my face. Oh, you don't think that as well, do you? Daniel sounded pretty convinced. Alid groaned. This is so stupid. Just because I don't shout about my feelings all the time. Why would ignoring him solve that? He shook his head. It wouldn't. I know it wouldn't. I was just scared of talking about it. Facing the possibility that he might just end our relationship because I seem like I'm not into it. I've been doing it since before the summer because I'm a fucking idiot. And now we've grown apart and I don't know if we'll ever go back to the way we were. I squeezed his hand. What about me? I said. I tried, he said, immediately, looking me in the eyes. I tried. I wrote so many replies to your text, but I couldn't send them. I thought they'd make you hate me. And as time went on, it just got worse and worse. I got more convinced that you hated me. And anything I said to you would just make you forget me forever. His eyes welled up again. I thought it'd be better if I just said nothing. At least then... there was still the possibility that I had something good in my life. Now that Universe City has gone. I don't hate you, I said. Far from it, actually. He sniffed. I'm really sorry, he said. I know I've been an idiot. Everything would be fine if I could have just said all this earlier. I knew that this was true. It's okay, I said. I get it. Sometimes you can't say the things you're thinking. Sometimes it's too hard. Why did you end Universe City? I asked. My mum kept calling me whenever I made an episode, telling me to stop doing it, or she'd stop sending me money, or she'd call the university or stuff like that. I didn't listen to her at first, but it got to the point where I was dreading every single episode, and I ran out of ideas, and I just hated doing it. His face crumpled and more tears fell. I knew she would ruin this for me. I knew she would take the one last thing I have and ruin it. I dropped his hand and hugged him. We fell into silence for a moment, and though nothing was fixed, it was a relief to hear him say exactly what he felt for once. We all just want you to be okay, I said, dropping my arms. All of us. All. You and Daniel. I shook my head. Karis is here. Alid froze. Karis, he whispered, like he hadn't said the name in years. Yeah, I said, almost whispering too. She's here to see you. She came with me to see you. Alid started to cry like I'd turned on a tap. Tears just started to pour out of his eyes. It made me laugh, which was probably very insensitive, but I couldn't help feeling happy in some weird way. I hugged him again because I had no idea what to say, and realised that he was laughing too, sort of, through his tears. We hoped. Karis, Daniel and Rain were still sitting in the foyer when we got back to college. When we entered through the door and Alid saw Karis, he stopped in his tracks and stared. Karis stood up from her seat and gazed at him from across the room. They'd once been similar, blue eyes and blonde hair, but they really looked nothing alike anymore. Karis was taller and rounder, and everything about her was clean, bold, block colours. Alid was small and pointy and looked ruffled and shadowed, his skin a little blotchy, his clothes crinkled, his hair several different shades of green, purple and grey. I walked away from Alid as Karis approached. As Karis moved in for a hug, I heard her whisper, I'm sorry for leaving you alone with her. Daniel and Rain were staring without reserve from their armchairs. Daniel looking a little unnerved at how physically different Alid was. Rain looking on with heart eyes, as if this were some sort of touching family drama documentary. I put my hands on each of their heads and gently turned them so they were facing away. How is he? Whispered Daniel as I sat down. There was no point lying. Absolutely terrible, I said, but at least he's not dead. I'd meant it half jokingly, but Daniel nodded in agreement. We'd done it. We'd found him. We'd helped him. We'd rescued him. We hoped. That's what we thought until the college door exploded open and in walked a plump woman with cropped hair and a tote bag over one shoulder. I jumped out of my seat faster than I had ever moved in my life. Upon seeing her, Karis sort of pulled Alid further away from the door towards us, and in the moments before he turned and saw her, I could see the confusion in Alid's eyes. Ali, darling, said Carol. On your own. Everybody was on their feet. I wasn't entirely sure what a standoff was, but I felt like this might be one of them. Carol blinked. Karis, what exactly are you doing here? I came to see Alid. I wasn't aware you still cared for any member of your family. Only the good ones, said Karis through gritted teeth. Carol raised an eyebrow. Well, it is how it is. I'm not here to see you, and frankly, I don't want to. I want to talk to my real child. I don't think you deserve to, said Karis, and I could feel the inaudible gasps of everyone in the room. Excuse me? Said the woman, her voice raising. You have no say in how I interact with my son. Karis cackled. It echoed around the foyer. Oh, believe me, I do. I do when you've been torturing him like he's a fucking doll. How dare you? How dare I? How dare you? You killed the dog, Carol. You killed the dog? Alid loved that dog. We grew up with that dog. That dog was a burden and a nuisance, and its life was miserable. Let me talk to her. Alid interrupted, sending everyone into silence despite his voice still being almost a whisper. He stepped out of Karis's grip and walked towards his mum. Come on, we'll just talk outside for a minute. You don't have to do this on your own, said Karis, though she didn't move from where she stood. Yes, I do, said Alid, and he followed his mum out of the college door. We waited for 10 minutes, then another 10. Rain kept jogging up to the door and listening through it to check that they were still there. Students kept walking past us and giving us funny looks. Karis was chatting softly to Daniel, whose knee was bouncing frantically up and down. I was sitting in a chair, contemplating what was happening and what Carol could possibly be saying to him. He'll be all right, won't he? Said Rain, coming to sit down next to me for the 6th time. He'll be all right in the end. I don't know, I said. Because I honestly didn't. Alid's fate rested entirely on what he decided to do tonight. How did she even know we were here? I asked. Because there was no way anyone believed that Carol just happened to be here. On the same day, 4 of us had driven 6 hours up the country to rescue him. She saw us leave, said Karis abruptly. I saw her looking out the window. She didn't know where we were going, though, said Rain. Karis laughed. Alid's long-lost sister sets off with his best friend in the same car, with bags of food for a long journey. Not that hard to guess, is it? Rain was about to say something else when we heard a car door slam. She bolted from her seat and swung open the door and shrieked, No! And we ran to join her, just in time to see Alid and his mother driving away in a taxi. University. I didn't think this could get any worse, said Daniel. But it literally just did. Great. We were standing in the middle of the road watching the taxi drive away. They'll be going to the station, said Karis. She'll be wanting to take him home. Well, we obviously can't let that happen, I said. Rain was already walking towards her car, which was still innocently parked on the double yellow lines by the college building. Everyone get in the car. It took us a moment to react, and a cry from Rain of, Get in the fucking car! And then we all got into the car, and Rain tore off after them. She broke the speed limit and got us there in 3 minutes. Daniel shouting, Slow down, we're all going to die, most of the way. We piled out of the car and into the station and checked the departures board. and there was a train to King's Cross leaving in 3 minutes from Platform 1. We ran towards Platform 1 without speaking to each other, and then there he was, standing by a bench with his mum, and I shouted out to him. We couldn't get any closer because we couldn't get through the ticket barrier, and he turned, his eyes wide as if he thought maybe he'd been imagining us the whole time. "Don't go home with her," I shouted. The station was lit up orange and gold against the darkness. "Please, Alid." He made to move towards us, but his mum grasped his arm and he stopped in his tracks. He opened his mouth to say something, but nothing came out. "We'll help you." I tried to think about what I was saying before I said it, but my heart was pounding, and I couldn't think properly about anything. Anything except that if Alid got on that train, we might never get him back. "Please, you don't have to stay with her." Carol tutted at me and turned away as if she couldn't hear me, but Alid continued to stare. The train was almost at the station. "It's my only option," he replied, although I could barely hear him. The train pulled in with a huge screeching noise. "I can't stay here. I have nowhere else to go." "You can stay with me instead." "Yeah, or me," Karis shouted. "In London." "You're not meant to be there," I continued. "She'll just make you go back to university. You were never meant to be at university." Carol started trying to pull him towards the train door. He moved slowly with her, but he was still looking at me. "You made the wrong decision. You thought you had to go to university, even though you didn't want to. Or you thought you wanted to go, but you really didn't. Just because we were told that's our only option." I was leaning most of my body weight over the ticket gate, as if I could snap it in two. "I promise it's not. I understand. I think I made that mistake as well. Or I haven't made it yet, but I'm going to change it." Alid stumbled onto the train, but remained standing in the doorway, looking at me. "Please, please, Alid." I was shaking my head wildly at him, and I felt myself start to cry, not from sadness, but from fear. I felt someone nudge me in the side, and when I looked, Rain had linked her fingers together and was holding them by my leg as a foothold. I realised what she was doing as she winked at me and said, "Go, before the ticket gate guy notices." I put my foot in her hands and Rain practically threw me over the ticket gate. I heard the ticket gate man shouting at me, but I ran towards the train door and stopped right in front of Alid. His mum was trying to pull him further onto the train, but Alid wasn't moving. He was just standing there, watching me. I held out my hand to him. "Please, don't go with her. You have other options. You're not trapped." I could hear my voice shaking, the panic and the desperation. "What if I don't?" he whispered. "What if I can't get a job and I'll never be able to leave home and... You can live with me and we'll get joint shifts at the village post office and we'll make Universe City together," I said, "and we'll be happy." He blinked away tears. He looked down, fixed on some point on the ground, and he didn't say anything else, but I saw him decide. "Alid!" Carol's voice sounded from somewhere behind him, sharp and demanding. Alid wrenched his arm out of her grip and took my hand. I mumbled, "Thank God," and saw he was wearing his lime green plimsolls with purple laces. And then he stepped off the train. 5. Spring term, C. Universe, city. We all stayed the night. It was too late to drive back home. Alid had a spare duvet for us to lie on, and the four of us didn't think we'd get much sleep. But Rain fell asleep only 10 minutes after she exclaimed, "I haven't been to a sleepover in months." And Karis quickly followed, covering herself with her leather jacket. Daniel was asleep within the next 15 minutes, wearing a pair of Alid's pyjama shorts and a t-shirt instead of his school suit, and tucked slightly under Alid's desk, because there definitely wasn't room for 5 people to sleep in here. Then, only Alid and I were awake, sitting on his bed against the wall. "What did you mean about you, like, making a mistake about uni?" he whispered, rolling his head towards me. What's your plan now?" "Well, the thing is, I don't actually think I care about English literature. I don't want to do it at university." Alid looked startled. "Don't you?" "I'm not sure I really want to go at all." "But that was what you cared about more than anything." "Only because I thought I had to," I said. "Because I was good at it. I thought that was the only way I was going to have a good life. But that's wrong." I paused. "I love making university with you," I said. "I don't feel like that when I'm studying." He stared at me. "What do you mean?" "I feel like myself when I'm with you. And that version of me doesn't want to study books for 3 more years just because other people are, and school told me that I should. That version of me doesn't want to get a desk job just for the money. That version of me wants to do what I want." He let out a small laugh. "What do you want to do?" I shrugged and smiled. "I don't have any plans. I might need to think about it all a bit more carefully before I make any decisions I regret. Like I did," said Alid. But he was smiling. "Well, yeah," I said, and we both laughed. "I could do anything, though. I could get a septum piercing." We both laughed again. "What about art?" Alid said. "You like art a lot, don't you? You could go to art college. You're really good at it, and you love it." I thought about the idea. Really thought about it. It definitely wasn't the first time someone had suggested that to me, and I didn't have any doubts that I would enjoy it. For a moment there, it actually felt sort of brilliant. All I remember from the rest of that night was waking up briefly and hearing Daniel and Alid talking to each other, whispering so quietly that they were barely making any sound at all. Alid was still next to me on the bed. Daniel was, as far as I could tell, looking up at him from the floor. I quickly shut my eyes again, before they noticed I was awake and thought I'd been eavesdropping. "Wait, I don't understand," said Daniel. "I thought that meant someone who doesn't like having sex at all." "I think that's the case for some people," said Alid. He sounded a little nervous. "But asexuality means, someone who doesn't feel, like, sexually attracted to anyone." "Right. Okay. And some people just feel like they're, like, partly asexual, so they only feel sexually attracted to people who they know really, really well. People they have, like, an emotional connection with." "Okay," And that's you. Yeah. And you are attracted to me. Because you know me really well. Yeah. And that's why you never have a crush on anyone. Yeah. There was a pause. Some people call that demisexual. But, it doesn't really matter what the word is. Demisexual. Daniel chuckled. I haven't even heard of that one. Yeah, it doesn't matter what the word is, to be honest. I'm just trying to explain what I actually, like, feel. It's the feeling that's the important thing. It's fine. It's just a bit complicated. There was a rustling sound, which might have been Daniel rolling over. Where did you find out about all this? The internet. You should have told me about it. I thought you might think it was silly or something. Who am I to judge anyone's sexuality? I'm massively gay. They both laughed softly. Alid continued, I just wanted you to understand, like, why I don't want to come out or anything. It's definitely not because I don't like you in that way. No, I get it. I get it. And I was just scared. I didn't know how to explain it to you and make you believe me. And I just slowly started avoiding you, which made you think I don't like you. And I was scared you'd just break up with me as soon as I spoke to you. I'm so sorry. I've been so horrible to you. Yeah, you've been an absolute bloody arse. I could hear that Daniel was smiling, and they both stifled a laugh. It's okay. I'm sorry too. Alid moved his arm off the bed. I wondered whether they were holding hands. So, can we just go back to the way things were? Whispered Alid. Can we just be us again? Daniel took a moment to reply. Yeah, we can, he said. In the morning, Alid and I walked to Boots to get some toothbrushes for everyone, because Karis said she was not going anywhere until she'd brushed her teeth. While we were there, Alid wandered off to look at hair dye, and once I joined him, I asked him if he wanted me to dye his hair for him when we got back to his room, and he said yes. Alid sat on his desk chair, his hair freshly washed, and I stood behind him with a pair of scissors we'd picked up in W.H. Smith. Francis. The nervousness in his voice was unmistakable. If you give me a bad haircut, I'm probably going to run away to Wales and live there until my hair grows back. It's fine. I snipped the scissors in the air. I'm arty. I got an A in my art AS. Rain laughed from where she was sitting on Alid's bed. But you didn't do hairdressing A-level, did you? I turned round and pointed the scissors at her. But I would have if they offered it. I cut Alid's hair a few centimetres shorter. It was still past his ears, but not so long that it was flat and heavy. And I attempted to cut in a few layers so he didn't look like a medieval squire. Overall, it turned out pretty well, in my opinion. And Alid said it was better than anything he'd ever asked for at the hairdresser's. Then we bleached his hair, which took ages, and turned it a kind of yellowy orange, which I thought was hilarious, and I took many photos on my phone. Once we'd done that, we dyed his hair pastel pink after he showed me a gif of some band member in a heavy denim jacket. Longish, just longer than his chin, and a soft, muted pink. After it was finished, I realised it was exactly how Radio's hair is described in Universe City. We'd been driving for 5 minutes when Rain's car broke down. She pulled over to the side of the road and sat very still for a moment before asking, quite politely, Is this an absolute joke? What do you do when you break down really far away from home? I asked. Isn't there some breakdown company we can call? Asked Daniel. I don't know, said Rain. I've never broken down before. We all got out of the car. Who do you call? I asked and looked at Caris. Well, don't look at me. I may know how to pay my income tax, but I know nothing about cars. I live in London. Daniel didn't drive either, and obviously Alid and I didn't, so we all just stood there. Caris sighed and reached into her pocket for her phone. Let me Google it, hang on. I need to get home, said Daniel. I've already missed 3 chemistry lessons, and that shit is difficult to catch up on. We could always get the train, I said. It's like £90 to get to Kent, I checked. I'll pay, said Alid. We all looked at him. I haven't really been spending any money much recently. My student loan came in a few weeks ago. But what about my car? Rain flopped dramatically over the bonnet and stroked it with one hand. I can't just leave her here. And Alid's stuff is in there, Daniel pointed out. Caris sighed. I'll stay with you, Rain, and we'll sort out your car. You three go home on the train. What? I said. Are you sure? Yeah, Caris smiled. I want to talk to this one anyway. She pointed towards Rain, who was making cooing noises and stroking the car bonnet. About what? University alternatives for people who aren't good at maths problems. She shrugged. Stuff they forget to tell you at school. Despite saying he was going to revise on the train, Daniel fell asleep almost immediately. Alid and I sat opposite each other with a table between us, and eventually we got onto the topic of university. I don't want it to end, I said. He drew in a breath and said, Neither do I. I think you should start it back up again. Well, I want to. So you're going to? And he said, maybe. But after that, we almost immediately started planning a new episode. Toulouse was in it, making a dramatic comeback from her sudden disappearance at the Gate of the Dead. And we started planning out some of the longer subplots as well. The dark blue building, February Friday, and Universe City itself. We started whispering lines of script to each other, and Alid jotted them down on his phone. But we ended up waking Daniel anyway, and he rolled his eyes when he realised what we were doing. But he was smiling too. He tried to go back to sleep but couldn't, so he just listened to us. You're doing the washing up for at least 3 weeks, said Mum. We were still on the train, about halfway home, and I was talking to her on the phone. I'd walked down the aisle to stand by the door in between 2 carriages, because both Alid and Daniel had fallen asleep. Also, I get to choose what Saturday night movie we watch for the next month. I can't just fork out £90 whenever I want. Believe me, I would if I could. I was at the garden centre the other day and they had a fountain shaped like a dog having a wee. £80. I mean, these are essential purchases we're talking about here, Francis. Essential purchases. I'm sacrificing just so you can catch a train. Okay, that's fine, I grinned. You can choose the movie on Saturday, as long as it's not Shrek. What about Shrek 2? Shrek 2 is allowed. Mum laughed and I rested my head on the train door. We were passing a town. I didn't know what town. I didn't know where we were exactly. Mum, I said. What's up, sweetheart? I don't think I want to do English Lit at university anymore. I paused. I don't think I want to go to university. Oh, Francis, She didn't sound disappointed. That's okay. Is it okay? I asked, because I wasn't sure. Yes, she said. It's okay. Summer. A new voice. Alid's event was one of the headliners. 4 p.m. in the biggest arena. I was passing some time, watching one of the other YouTubers, while Alid was getting ready and rehearsing the show with some of the backstage crew. The girl on at the moment was a musical comedian. She talked about Tumblr a lot, and interviewed a couple of actors who were making appearances, and then sang a few songs about Supernatural. As I was watching, I found myself standing next to someone who I felt like I had met before. Her hair was a weird black, or maybe very dark brown, I couldn't quite tell. And she had a thick, full fringe concealing her eyebrows. She looked kind of tired, like she wasn't quite aware of where exactly she was. After I'd been staring at her for going on a full 10 seconds, she returned the stare. I think I've seen you before, she said, before I could. Did you go to Higgs? Yeah, years ago. I moved to the academy, though. My voice trailed away. She looked me up and down. Did you dress up as Doctor Who once, for a party? I laughed out of surprise. Yeah. There was a pause. How's the academy? She said. I heard it's pretty academic now, like my school was. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's school. We both chuckled knowingly. The girl turned towards the stage. God, school nearly killed me. So glad it's over. Same, I said, with a grin. I went backstage. I had to run to avoid being late because I hadn't been keeping an eye on the time. A woman wearing all black clothes and a head microphone tried to call me over as I stormed down a backstage corridor, but I quickly said, I'm with radio, and waved the pass I was wearing round my neck, and she left me alone. I guess I looked a bit like a fan. I was wearing my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles leggings and an oversized band sweatshirt. I walked, doors upon blank doors. At the end, a sign pointing left, stage. I turned left, climbed some steps. I passed through the door that said stage on it and found myself in the dark shadows of the backstage area. There were strange pulleys and ropes and wires everywhere, flashing lights and technical equipment, duct tape randomly plastered all over the place. Men and women all dressed in black hurried around, trapping me in some sort of hurricane of bodies. Until one guy stopped and asked me, are you here with the creator? And I replied in the affirmative. He grinned, freakishly, fairly large, bearded, an iPad in his hands. He must have been at least 30. Oh my God, you must know who he is then. Oh my God, I haven't seen him yet. All I've heard is that his name is Alid, but I have no idea what he looks like. Vicky said she saw him, but I haven't seen him yet. He should be waiting over at stage right. Oh my God, I'm just so excited. I didn't really know what to say to this, so I let him scuttle away and then made my way round the back of the stage. A narrow corridor between the back curtain and a black brick wall bordered by lights, as if we were aeroplanes that needed guiding into land. Stage right was practically empty compared to stage left. There were three figures up near the front, two of them sort of fussing over the third. And then I saw him. I stopped for a moment. I couldn't quite believe this was happening at all. No, I could believe it. And it was amazing. It was spectacular. The three figures eventually noticed me and turned, stepping into the light. Alid and two of the backstage crew, a man and a woman. The man, early 20s, had blue hair. The woman, 40s, had dreadlocks. Alid walked towards me. He looked amazing in the weirdest way imaginable. He looked me in the eye, nervously, for only a few seconds, before turning his head away with a shy smile. He fiddled with his gloves. I grinned and looked him up and down. Yes. Radio. His hair, that stupid pastel colour, and that stupid length, all tucked behind his ears. Three-piece suit, tie, gloves. There was a whole fresh wave of fan art on its way. They were going to love him. You look so cool, I said. And I meant it. He looked so cool. He looked like he could rise from the ground and float among the clouds and become the new sun. He looked like he could kill someone with a smile. He looked like the best person in the world. I had my art college acceptance letter in my pocket. Alid didn't know about it yet. I'd never been more excited about anything, but I wasn't going to tell him now. I was going to surprise him later. Today really was a wonderful day. He went to speak, but sort of swallowed instead. The whole hall blacked out, sending the audience wild with screams. Backstage, we could only see each other by a tiny desk lamp attached to a pipe on my right. 20 seconds, said Dreadlocks. It's going to be all right, isn't it? Alid said, his voice shaking. The script, it was okay, wasn't it? Yes, it was brilliant, as usual, I said. But it doesn't matter what I think. This is your show. Alid laughed, a rare and beautiful thing. I wouldn't be here without you, you giant idiot. Stop making me cry. 10 seconds, said Blue Hair. And now, introducing a new voice to the East Concert Hall. And he went white. I swear to God, even in the thin light I could see it. His smile dropped and he just temporarily died. A YouTube phenomenon who has recently passed 700,000 subscribers. Oh, what if people don't like it? He said, his voice only just audible. Well, they're all expecting something brilliant from me. It doesn't matter, I said. It's your show. If you like it, then it is brilliant. The mysterious student who has hidden behind a blank screen for the past 3 years. The stage exploded into colour, flashing lights soaring around the concert hall. The bass introduction to Nothing Left for Us began to play, and Alid picked up his guitar and hung it over his head. Oh my God, I said. Oh my God, oh my God. 5 seconds. The elusive. 4. The all-powerful. 3. The death-defying. 2. The government-overthrowing. 1. Radio silence. I could only see the back of his head, with the back of his neck just visible above his suit jacket as he stepped into the light of the stage. His steps happening so slowly, as heart-stopping music erupted into the air. I stopped breathing and saw everything. I saw the audience rise to their feet, just so wonderfully happy to finally see him in person. And it amazed me how many people Alid had made smile just by taking 2 steps onto a lit stage. I saw the backstage crew gather at the curtains on stage left, clambering over each other to get a look at the anonymous creator. I saw Alid raise a gloved hand. I could see every face in the crowd. Every face smiling, wearing gloves and suits like Radio. Some dressed as Chester or Atlas, or the new characters from this year, Marine, Jupiter, Atom. I saw a girl near the front dressed as Toulouse, and it made my heart hurt. I watched Alid, or radio, or whoever that guy was, grasp the microphone and open his mouth. And I whispered the words into the air while he roared them into the crowd. Hello. I hope somebody is listening. Universe City, live at Live Video London, 2014. Posted by Live Video. 1,562,979 views. Published on 16th of September. Radio's first ever live appearance at Live Video London 2014 in the East Concert Hall on Saturday the 22nd of August. After revealing what they truly look like, Radio describes the outcome of their search for their lost brother and the latest developments in their quest to find an escape route from Universe City. They also discuss the future of Universe City and its sister cities across the country. Info. Radio is the creator of internationally celebrated web podcast series Universe City, whose podcasts have reached over 10 million views on YouTube since March 2011. Each podcast runs for 20 to 25 minutes, and the series follows students of Universe City as they discover the city's secrets, faults, and hypocrisies, as narrated by the one student who does not want to be there. The enigmatic Radio Silence. Transcript unavailable.
That was Radio Silence by Alice Oseman, read by Aisha Kala. This programme was produced by ID Audio for Harper Audio. Text copyright Alice Oseman, 2016. Production copyright 2016 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Alice Oseman asserts the moral right to be identified as the author of this work. Thank you for listening.